And the 1-2. Strike three, and the ball game is over. And the Atlanta Braves win the ball game 3-0. And they take the series 2 out of 3. The final, Braves 3, Cubs 0.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Not the tone. You want to hear from Pat Hughes at the end of a Cubs game? What a more celebratory vibe, but hadn't been available. Third series in a row. The Cubs have dropped 2-5 in this homestand, so good time for the Cubbies to hit the road. I am Anthony Herron. It's a Thursday night here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Hour number two. So let's go back out to the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Talk to Brett Taylor, baseball writer from Bleacher Nation. He is on Twitter at Brett_A_Taylor. Man, this offense for the Cubs, I know it was not too long ago. We heard the refrain that the Cubs offense was broken. That was supposed to be the previous iteration of a potential Cubs dynasty. Man, what's going on with this offense right now, Brett?
Oh, yeah. I don't think they led at any point during this homestand. Not at any point. They won a couple games, but they were right at the end. So I don't think they led at the end of any inning except for the end of those two games. And so, yeah, much of that is the offense. Some of it is matchups. You know, they have had a challenging stretch of opposing pitchers that they've been facing. They have had some injury issues. I want to acknowledge those things. But by and large, I think we all know, if you're watching, it's they're not getting production from guys that they need to be getting production from.
And the production of the staff, especially the starting pitching, is a part of what I do find a bit frustrating, because there are games like today where you get Brett Brown out there for another exceptional effort. And, you know, maybe we can make a case, we can discuss it in a moment, if he could have or should have stayed out there even longer with Brown, but we know there's a plan in place for his young arm. But it feels like there's games like this where you're getting such exceptional outings from the starting staff almost every time they take the bump lately, but the offense isn't allowing the win-loss record to sort of capitalize on that. Has Craig Counsell, is he being asked about that? Like, if these games and the production they're getting from the pitching staff, if it's leading to missed opportunities right now at this point in the schedule?
Well, I think the Cubs think about it in the other way, that right now, because of the success of the starting staff, and because actually before last night, the bullpen had actually had a really hot 2 weeks, they see that as, okay, these guys are keeping us afloat. Not that these are missed opportunities. It's that, okay, well, thank God that the pitching is doing what it's doing so that we can at least kind of hover around where we are. But as a fan, at least, I can't help but react the way you're framing it, which is when you're getting these performances, when you have two pitchers like Shota Imanaga and Javier Assad pitching as two of the five best pitchers in baseball, it is impossible not to look at that as a missed opportunity when you're not winning every single game that they start. Or, like you said, when you get four innings out of Ben Brown today and then pretty strong bullpen performance, we can put a pin in Kyle Hendricks, because I imagine we'll be talking about that in a moment. But, right, you know, it stings to lose a game like that, because you're not going to get that performance every day, and especially not against a team like the Braves. And so, yeah, it's pretty hard to walk away from a lot of these games and not feel like these are missed opportunities.
And especially because I have the sort of thought that lingers in my mind with Jed Hoyer talking about wanting to find more games during last season. He's talking about wanting to find more games where, yep, you get to the latter stages of the game and there's less leverage. You know, you want a few laughers in some of these, yep, victories, and the Cubs aren't putting themselves in position for that. And so the entire lineup is potentially taxed by the time you get to late August and into September. And we just saw them fade based off of that last season. Let's go to Ben Brown, though, for a moment before. Yes, I 100% want to get to Kyle Hendricks as well. But he seems to be an example of an approach that Craig Counsell is taking right now of not wanting to overtax any individual players, not wanting to overtax the starting staff early on. But how big of a piece of this sort of puzzle can a guy like Ben Brown be? Because his pure stuff, his ability to just rear back and blow it by some guys, enhanced by the nuance he seemingly can pitch and not just throw the ball with. I mean, how big of a piece of the run the Cubs could maybe go on this season do you see him maybe being as a starter?
Well, it's kind of incredible to think about all of the things that are being balanced right now with respect to Ben Brown. There is, as you said, this tension between, can he be a starter long-term? Is he more of a high-leverage arm? What can he be if we develop him properly? How much value can we get out of him this year in a competitive year? And all the while, he is a young, unestablished rookie arm with relatively limited, even minor league track record, because he had surgery before he came to the Cubs. And he's being asked now to bounce among roles in his rookie year, which sometimes I think we gloss over how hard that is for some pitchers to adjust their routine constantly. And it's really interesting to me that Craig Counsell, in a way that we kind of haven't seen from other managers in recent memory, what he's asking, not only Ben Brown, but Hayden Wesneski, it's the same thing, what he's asking these young arms to do, and they're really coming through, you know, in ways I did not expect. And so, not to tangent on your question that was about Ben Brown specifically, but I have appreciated so far how well that is working to kind of move these guys around and put some trust in some young arms that maybe they wouldn't have this opportunity if everyone had been healthy.
Do you believe that Craig Counsell taking this approach, are there sort of remnants from seeing the Cubs fade last season? Obviously, he wasn't here, but the front office was intact. The fade that took place last September, is that a part of maybe the communication between Counsell, Jed, and the brain trust over there? Are they sort of having Craig Counsell make it a focused effort to not overtax guys early in the season? Because it feels like there's a concerted effort to not do that.
My guess is that they're just philosophically aligned anyway. We saw it so many times over the years with the Brewers, how well he managed a pitching staff and how he seemed to be getting so much more out of guys throughout the course of the year. And you're exactly right. Last year, what happened in September, late August and September, with the bullpen and the key arms was, I'm not throwing it all on David Ross. I really don't think that's fair, but I do think it is fair to say that what happened in late August and September was a byproduct of how heavily certain arms were used in June, July, and early August, and they just didn't have anything left. And I do think it's wise to be more thoughtful about that earlier in the year, but on into the summer months too, I think we're going to see probably a different approach. At least I hope we do. And I think it's that Craig Counsell already kind of operates that way. And it's a way that I think the front office, I agree with you, was probably looking to say, okay, we need to pull some different levers this year because it just didn't quite work for us last year.
I wasn't certain if Kyle Hendricks would end up seeing action out of the pen against Atlanta, you know, because part of the conjecture has been that maybe they were just trying to avoid pitching against the Braves at all. And then there it was in a one-run game in the eighth. Here comes Kyle Hendricks. And again, it didn't go very well. Were you surprised to see him out there?
I was until I stepped back a little bit and sort of considered everybody's rest schedule and kind of where the rest of the pitching staff was. When you kind of went through guy by guy, it actually did make a lot more sense why he was tapped for that spot. I would guess the Cubs would have preferred it be maybe not the Braves, maybe not a one-run game, and maybe not a late inning, but it's not as if Kyle Hendricks is going to feel the pressure of it. You know, he's not some young guy who's not come into those spots, so at least you have that part to be comfortable about. And it's really just a matter of how well he can operate without the same kind of routine, without the same kind of notice. It's a very different job, and it's one that he's not had before. I would say I'm open-minded to the possibility that he can be a useful arm out of the bullpen for the Cubs this year. I would love that if that were the case. But I'm not, I wouldn't say I'm expecting it. And today's outing obviously was a disappointing first effort.
Brett Taylor of Bleacher Nation with me here on the Score. To look at Ian Happ as of late, you know, got sat down for a couple of games. Now he's been back in. Did have a double in the game today. Do you feel like you're seeing any signs from Happ that maybe he's going to come out of the funk he was in for a while?
Yeah, we're seeing moments of a little higher quality contact. I think for me, I mostly fall back on the fact that if a guy, we know he's been a little streaky in his career. He's had these blistering hot stretches, and he's also had some times when kind of needed a step back to get back in the swing of things. But ultimately, by the end of the year, he's been one of the more consistent offensive performers, not just during his time in the big leagues, but for a very long time for the Cubs, just in terms of you get kind of the same thing that you're going to expect from him by the end of the year. It's very, very consistent production. And I know it's not as much as some people have hoped it would be, but it's consistently very, very solid. And so I kind of fall back on that track record and say, he's going through it a bit. He's maybe hopefully coming out of it a bit now. But by the end of the year, I'd be very surprised if we didn't look back and say, okay, you know, all in all, it was there by the end of the year. It stinks that it's happening right now at the same time as so many other Cubs bats are kind of struggling to find grass.
And with that in mind, because it's not just Ian Happ, like you referenced, there's so many bats that just aren't there right now. And a lot of it seems to be because you've had guys in and out of the lineup at various points here, but they are getting healthier, or at least less injured. But there's been a few guys hiding injuries or trying to play through things. So it's hard to know who's really completely at full health out there. But at the moment, is there a bat in the lineup for the Cubs that's at least out there performing at the moment that you think it'll be vital for this particular individual to really get going?
Well, it's interesting because you could, the Cubs have a lineup full of guys with enough talent that they could have an above average offense. Like it's, right. You almost couldn't even pick off one guy, because if Michael Bush finally really turned it on, or if Seiya Suzuki became what we knew he could be, if Cody Bellinger does what he did last year, if Christopher Morel takes that next step forward, and so on and so forth, the bones are there for a good offense. It's just that at each level, each guy kind of has different issues, you know. And so, to answer your question, you know, the guy I think about the most is Christopher Morel, and it's because what I see from him at the plate is a very mature approach, leaps and bounds even over last year. I see great contact quality. I see everything that you'd want to see from an impact hitter. He's just not quite getting results right now. And he's a guy I think that's just had some bad luck. You know, the advanced metrics support it. I know people hate to hear that, but I think he's just had a lot of bad luck this year compared to some of the other hitters in the lineup are getting the results they deserve, so to speak, which are not strong right now. And they're going to need to improve performance to get better results. Whereas with Morel, just keep doing what you're doing, guy, because I think the results are going to come if you just keep doing what you're doing.
7-game roadie coming up for the Cubs starting tomorrow in St. Louis. A couple of games behind Milwaukee right now in the division. And throughout the offseason, when there were concerns about if the Cubs should add more help out of the pen, if the Cubs should add more power in the lineup, part of what I continued to fall back on was that there's no other teams in the division that look like they're going to be in a position to just kind of run away with this thing. Yeah. And that's kind of proven to be the case so far, still early in this season. Is that enough for the Cubs to fall back on in that regard? Because even though there's a lot of meat on the bone for, you know, whether it's the pen or the offense, especially the injuries, all these things, they're just 2 games behind Milwaukee at the moment. And I don't think anyone is going to just kind of pick this thing up and run away from them. So is there a level of comfort that should come with that? Or do you think the front office needs to find an aggressive move or two to make in the not too distant future?
Well, on the one hand, you don't want it to be that way. You don't want it to feel like the Cubs are backing into a division title just because the other 4 teams are disappointing or didn't really load up or whatever. Because I agree with you. I know I sleep on the Brewers every year, but I'm not terribly impressed with any of the other 4 teams in the division. And I think, I still think this is the division for the Cubs to take. But ultimately, what you want to see is the Cubs at least stick around where they are now by the time we get into mid-July. And then you start talking about those big decisions about, okay, how much do we put our foot down on the gas to really try to improve the team and do some of the things that we didn't do in the offseason that we could have done, but maybe wanted to see how the first half played out. And I think there's going to be those opportunities. There are every year. And, you know, in the end, I think, too, what the front office would say about this question is it's been a tough – everyone knew they had a tough first 2 months of the schedule. It really did line up that way, and they've had a ton of injuries. You know, what, 17 guys on the injured list this year? Just a ridiculous amount of injuries. And yet here they are, not only second in the division, but they still hold the second wild card spot. I mean, we're nowhere near the end of the season, so I'm not counting games, but point there being, in the wild card race, you're competing against the second and third best teams in the other two divisions. Those are some very good teams that you're talking about. So it's not as if the Cubs have been a total disaster, even outside the NL Central. And I think if they can just keep their head above water for another couple weeks and they do start to get into a softer part of the schedule, then I would hope to see an acceleration above and ahead of the Brewers.
Is there even a question who would win the Cy Young in the National League right now?
No, none.
Are you surprised by that as it relates to
Yes. Yeah, I mean, to this degree, I mean, I think obviously we know projecting players coming over from Japan is an imperfect art. There are a lot of reasons why it's pretty hard to know for sure what types of executions are going to translate to the Major League Baseball game. And with Imanaga, you know, he had really high home run rates for Japan, which is unusual because it's not quite as homer reliant as we see over here in the States. And that was a legitimate concern that we were probably going to see a ton of strikeouts because of his unique pitch execution, but he's up in the zone. He doesn't have a ton of experience executing up in the zone. And so if he wasn't good at that, he's probably going to give up a lot of home runs, and we just hope that he doesn't walk anybody and they're solo shots and maybe he can be a good number two, number three. That's kind of where my head was, and we saw the contract he got, which sometimes is a trailing indicator of what teams think, and so that would suggest that teams thought, yeah, maybe a three, maybe a four. So the degree to which he's been able to just own big league hitters, just clowning them every time out, that was not on my radar, and I don't think it was on anyone else's radar, again, based on that contract. And so I'm just enjoying Showmania as much as I can. I think, you know, adjustments will come. This is a very difficult league. But for now, like, just we got to really enjoy this ride.
And, I mean, you know, I certainly wasn't following him closely overseas. But, I mean, seeing the level of personality and kind of the bravado that he brings onto the mound with him and how personable he is, even through an interpreter with the media. It's just fun. It's fun to watch him pitch. It's fun to watch him interact. And, you know, when he's on the mound, it gives you a little bit of something extra. Was that known about him when he was coming over?
We saw glimpses of it in the World Baseball Classic last year where he was the finishing game starter for Team Japan. And big energy, you know, gets very pumped up out there. I can't say that I knew anything about his personality beyond that he was going to be so delightful, you know, but that's, you do love to see that because we get so caught up in the wins and losses, which that's most of what we're here for, right? We want to see our team win and that we're focused on that, but it's nice when you can like the players too, right? When you can feel like they are entertaining, interesting, nice, fun people. And that's the vibe that we get from him. And that's been a fun part of the experience too.
And it's allowed Justin Steele to sort of fly under the radar a little bit. Sure. Where's the level of concern with how he's pitched?
Pretty much none. I mean, I think the performance, you know, this week was pretty strong, actually. I mean, it's debatable whether the coming back out for the seventh inning was really the issue. You know, we have to remember he ramped all the way up, you know, gearing to go. Then he strains the hamstring, and then he's coming back without like a normal ramp up, because it was sort of in between. You know, he'd already done the spring training. He was already stretched out, but he hadn't pitched in a lot of competitive games to kind of lock it in. I think we're going to see that happen in the next 3, 4, 5 starts. We're going to see him lock it in. Is he going to be exactly as good as he was last year? Maybe not. There are some indicators in there that might suggest there was going to be some natural regression anyway. But is he still going to be a guy you want at the front of your rotation? Absolutely. I still believe that 100%.
All right, Brett. Got to know what you're going to put on the grill this weekend. How do you tend to spend your Memorial Day?
Oh, we have a lot of house projects we're taking care of. So I will be grilling up a lot of back soreness as I try to move stuff around.
That's something to look forward to. That's good.
That's very, very exciting.
All right. Well, hopefully you will at least find some sort of a carnivorous delight along the way somewhere with all these home projects that you're going to be working on. Really appreciate you taking the time to join me tonight, man.
Yeah, thank you so much.
As Brett Taylor of Bleacher Nation. I want to continue the Cubs conversation on the other side of a timeout here, because there's a level of patience that I think is being exuded by the Cubs manager that will hopefully pay dividends later on, but it at least indicates to me that there's a plan in place. I'll describe what I mean on the other side of this timeout. I'm Anthony Herron. You're listening to Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Yeah, I mean, it was a quiet day, and the balls we did hit hard were, you know, whether hitting the wrong place or at the wrong trajectory. And ultimately, you know, we didn't do enough offensively. And it's, you know, there's the answer is to just come back tomorrow and have good at-bats and swing at the right pitches. And that's how you have to move forward with it.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Of course, the voice of Craig Counsell, Cubs manager. Cubs dropped another series here today. So you understand the disappointment that folks left Wrigley with. But at the same time, I do think my impression, perhaps even my hope, is that this is kind of a part of a grand design, not only as it relates to this season, but viewing what the next few years could lend for the Cubs. You know, we do know that, at least at the moment, it seems the Ricketts haven't been excited about spending into the competitive balance tax, but that's an option where later in the season they could become more aggressive with that. So my impression, this is not reporting, I haven't talked to anybody with the Cubs about this, but just my impression of how they've been operating, frankly, for the last couple of seasons, where, you know, you go through the full dramatic teardown a couple of years ago, they hit bottom in a rapid manner and then began to sort of systematically spend money just to begin to build things back up a little more each of the last couple of seasons here. And it's kind of been smart money, I would say, is the way that I would describe it. There hasn't been an approach by the Cubs to, you know, to really leverage financially what the future could hold here. And even you look at, you know, not this season, but last season's Cody Bellinger deal would certainly be an example of that. The Seiya Suzuki deal last season would be an example of that, from that offseason and bringing him in, and, you know, some of the efforts just to begin to bolster the lineup without going the big money, big dollar, top of the market sort of approach, you know, to get some of the guys in here. And I think even with the pitching staff, you could certainly point to, you know, a very similar approach here, where folks have been wondering, all right, where's your John Lester move? You know, where's your guy who can, you know, be that top of the rotation guy that, you know, will carry you into a World Series future? Well, that wasn't Marcus Stroman. You know, but you got a couple of quality years out of Stroman to begin, you know, sort of building something with the Cubs and allow them to begin a competitive stretch here. And then it just, you know, didn't make sense anymore for them with Stroman coming off of last season. And so now they go over and bring in Shota Imanaga and Javier Saad pitching as well as he ever has, frankly. You got the young arm of Ben Brown, and then we see moves being willing to be made with a guy like Kyle Hendricks, who meant so much to the World Series past of the Cubs. But the willingness of Craig Counsell to, at least for the moment, pull the plug on Kyle Hendricks as a starter and try bringing him out of the pen. There are a lot of examples that aren't only a part of this season's formula, but I believe we've seen an approach by the Cubs for the last couple of years of a more systematic, a more methodical sort of approach in trying to build on top of a foundation that's been laid there. And even the thought of what Christopher Morel can potentially become through development in the Cubs lineup. And I, you know, so far I like it, as I referenced in the previous segment, the fact that there's not a squad in this division. I was talking to Speaks about this last week, where I understand some impatience that can creep in with this, because it feels like there's more that the Cubs could access. You know, there's more financially that they could access. There's more that maybe this lineup could be capable of if people were playing at their peak. And none of that is really at its peak right now, but it's still a competitive ball club. More often than not this season, it's been an entertaining ball club to watch. Certainly when the offense has been doing more than it's been doing as of late, it's been a very entertaining ball club to watch. And here they are, they're in second place in the division. And if they take the road and get their act together, then who knows what it can really mean for, you know, their standing in the division a week from now, you know, after a nice couple of series on the road. That possibility is certainly there. I think that plan, while it hasn't been laid out with specificity to not be overly aggressive right off the bat and continue to build things moving forward, that just to me is what all the evidence ends up kind of suggesting about this. And to me, the approach of Craig Counsell, and when you listen to him talk, there's a lot of that within the way that he describes things, even talking about the Cubs offense. Let's hear from Counsell himself, just talking about the fact that he believes that, yeah, the offense has been struggling as of late, but he feels the Cubs offense really just needs to stay the course.
Well, I mean, I think good pitching contributes to it, and I think a lot of factors contribute to it. But, you know, for the players, I think that the answers are just staying in kind of your thing and your process and swinging at the right pitches. That's how you get out of it. That's what we have to just have faith that we're going to do and will do. These are good offensive players. You go through stretches like this during a season. It's not fun going through stretches like this as a group. It's of course it's frustrating. But this is a good offensive group and we'll score runs.
I think it's a talented and a capable offensive group. I'm not sure if good is exactly what's a fitting or an accurate description of the Cubs offense right now. I was reading earlier, Sahadev Sharma was writing in The Athletic after the game today. He was talking about sort of a line of demarcation being back in late April when the Cubs beat the Boston Red Sox 7-1, moved to a season high 8 games over .500. At that point, and there was already injuries in the lineup and in the staff at that point, even a month ago. And then the very next day after that, that was game number 27 for the Cubs, and they got shut out at that point. That was the first shutout of the year. It was about a month ago. And now, on the whole, after today's game, the 3-0 loss to Atlanta, they've been shut out 5 times on the season. And that's 5 times out of the last 25 games that the Cubs haven't scored a run. So Adam Sharma was writing about that in The Athletic. I certainly recommend you read the full work that he just put out after the Cubs lost today against the Atlanta Braves. But a couple of players, you know, Nico Horner, a big part of what the Cubs hope their offense can become this year. Seiya Suzuki, another player, had a couple of hits in the game today. Nico returning after being a little bit banged up, having the soft tissue injury, missing a little bit of time. I thought that was an example of some caution to give Nico a few games before they put him back in action. And I can only imagine how eager he was to get back out there. Now he's back. Seiya Suzuki back as well. And Craig Counsell was asked after the game whether or not he's seeing signs that both Nico and Seiya could be close to breaking out.
If you talk about those guys, I think we're you know, going in the right direction for sure. You know, Christopher Morel's having, you know, doing a nice job and not getting results for it. But it, you know, it has to be, you know, a lineup to score runs. You're going to have, you know, multiple guys swinging the bats well. And, you know, we just, this homestand has been a struggle for, it was a struggle for sure, unfortunately. So, you know, nothing to do but come back tomorrow and have good at bats, swing at the right pitches, and as a group, kind of do it together.
That together approach, it can be, you know, a part of the formula when you have a young, talented player like Christopher Morel, who's still figuring things out. And when you have an entire lineup that's struggling, an entire offense that hasn't really done much throughout the month of May, then that frustration can build. And so that word together that Craig Counsell uses there, I think, is really important for the club to kind of continue to utilize that approach to respond. And it sounds like, as you hear so many of the guys address the media here during this stretch, where you hear them talking about the togetherness that's there, that's required to get through some of these moments. Just in this series against Atlanta, runners in scoring position was a big issue for the Cubs. They won the game on Tuesday 4-3. They were 4 out of 14 with runners in scoring position in that game. On Wednesday, 1 out of 5 in a game that they lost 9-2. And then today's game, 0-3 with runners in scoring position in a game that they were shut out. So just a .227 batting average in this series against the Braves with runners in scoring position. And we've seen that ebb and flow in recent years with the Cubs. It became less of an issue for a big stretch of the season last year where that timely hitting really stepped forward. Now we're in a stretch of the season where it's not the case anymore for the Cubs. And for a guy like Christopher Morel, who to me has been one of the guys between last season and this, who's had a bunch of big hits in key moments, especially late in game, sometimes a home run, sometimes just showcasing an ability to fight off some pitches and then just put the ball in play when necessary. So there's a maturity at the plate for Christopher Morel that we're watching develop, and especially in some of those critical moments. And Craig Counsell talked about his young third baseman and the approach he wants to continue watching him take in the box.
Well, he keeps taking pretty good swings. So, you know, that's his job, is to just keep taking good swings, and he keeps doing that.
I mean, that as much as anything, when you've got a player who's as physically gifted as Christopher Morel, to be able to just have the proper approach. And I think for those around him, whether it's Craig Counsell, whether it's his teammates, to continue to infuse the wherewithal into Christopher Morel, that if you keep taking the approach you're taking, it'll lead to consistent results. I feel like that's really important for a young athlete, for a young baseball player, to continue to hear that reinforced in him over and over again, that positive reinforcement of knowing that what you're doing, with as gifted as you are, will end up showcasing itself in results at some point down the road here. And it's a part of what can lead to exceptional consistency when you are process focused as opposed to results focused. And that can be really difficult for young athletes, young competitors, as they're trying to get over the hump and trying to showcase how talented they can be and want to make plays in big moments for their teams. And so to hear that from Craig Counsell, from his teammates on a consistent basis, it's going to be a really big deal for the continued confidence, for the continued development of Christopher Morel as a third baseman, you know, with the way he's got to continue developing there defensively. And he's probably been even better so far early this season than a lot of folks anticipated he would be or could be at that. So just think about that, balancing that with what he is as an offensive presence and some of the maturity he's beginning to show in the box. And using the word maturity, it's hard not to think of Kyle Hendricks and what he's been for the Cubs over the years. And, you know, we don't know what the future holds for Kyle Hendricks. We know the present is not going very well. There's a reason he's gotten essentially demoted from the starting staff and why he's being pulled out of the pen at this point. Like I mentioned earlier, I'm fairly surprised to see Craig Counsell put Kyle Hendricks in the game at that point, the eighth inning of a one-run game against a Braves lineup that's just top to bottom, just really talented and can rake seemingly everywhere. And so the question was basically, well, Craig, why put Kyle Hendricks in that position?
We pitched well today. But, we, you know, there's a game tomorrow. There's a game the following day. And Kyle, as a member of the bullpen, is going to have to cover innings and kind of do his job and serve his role down there to help everybody here and help the guys down there. So, you know, that was just we had a bullpen game, essentially. Ben did a heck of a job. The game, you know, for what we're trying to do, the game, I think, worked out pretty well. And, you know, we got to a spot where those were Kyle's innings. And he made a couple of two strike pitches to Trump, and then couldn't finish off Duvall, and Albies hit a double.
Couple of big series coming up here for the Cubs. They'll be in St. Louis for the next few days, and then starting on Monday with Memorial Day, four games coming up in Milwaukee. Craig Counsell's return to Milwaukee, and he doesn't seem to get too caught up in or worked up about the emotion of things or the romanticizing of moments like that, but it'll certainly be big news. They're already talking about it in Wisconsin news and sports outlets, the anticipation of Craig Counsell returning to Milwaukee. So a big stretch of games in this seven-game road trip that the Cubs have coming up in both St. Louis and Milwaukee. Got some sound from the Cubs and some reaction to what was going on the north side of the city here. Let's get back to some Bears conversation. In the midst of OTAs, a lot of folks, including head coach Matt Eberflus, addressed the media at the podium today. We'll get some Bears sound going for you next. My guy Tyler Farrengill on the ones and twos. I am Anthony Herron. This is Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
All right, well, I see progress. I see progress for sure. And that's going to continue to be that way. He's been in early, you know, stays late, you know, asking questions at night. He's got his iPad at night, you know, in the hotel and been working his tail off.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
That was the voice of Bears head coach Matt Eberflus. Talked to the media today, and media got to go out there and check out a competitive practice session. The Bears, inexperienced offense. I won't call them all young, but they're certainly inexperienced working together in the Shane Waldron scheme versus a talented Bears defense that showed itself as one of the best in football by the end of last year. So there's a lot for a rookie quarterback to try and learn, to try and figure out when he's going out there playing against that level of competition. One of the other things Flus talked about was in a little bit more detail, addressing specifically the progress that he's seen so far from his rookie quarterback.
Specifically with Caleb, it's really just about when he, can rip the call, you know, get the call in and out of the huddle, break in the huddle, having that pace that we need to have. And we've been doing, of course, the walkthroughs, and he's been really good with that. And this is the first time going against, you know, a pro defense, you know, and a pretty good one. So it's going to be a learning for everybody. And they're getting everything together, and it was progress. I saw progress from the first day to the second to the third. So it's been good.
And pretty consistently, especially in the off season and undoubtedly early in the off season, the offense versus the defense can be something where you can in a lot of ways get on the same page, or you can at least perform at a high level defensively. As long as you've got talent over there, you can get cohesive on defense more quickly than you can on offense, because there's a little less choreography that's required on defense, because you are in more of a reactive position defensively versus what's happening with the offense. But you add in the fact that this defense is talented, is experienced in the game, and is experienced in the current scheme that they're running and facing an offense that, at least for today, what the media got to see, no Keenan Allen at receiver, no Roma Dunze at receiver, and a rookie quarterback who doesn't have a whole lot of experience facing them. Matt Eberflus talked a little bit about how the connection on offense can just be a bit different.
Yeah, I would say it is different. We have a good mix of guys. That we've been doing some different, unique things. Having guys different spots outside of football, you know, just obviously voluntary, but getting together that way. And that's been really good. And you can feel that it's authentic. And we've had our skull sessions, which we had in the past. We've mixed the teams, you know, four or five times, you know, in terms of small groups and talking about, you know, our path to the Bears and some of the things that we've had, hardships in our lives and how we got through that. And, and talking about different topics like that. So I always think that's good.
Now, those conversations can certainly be helpful. They can be vital to the continued success of a squad. And even though you don't have all the receivers healthy and on the field together, those conversations can still aid the development of that core. And Matty Eberflus talked a bit about the depth that the Bears have at wide receiver.
Typically, when you have one player in situational football and even on first down based on formation, you certainly can tilt your coverage to that player to eliminate that player the best way you can. And when you have other guys that are on the opposite side of that, for example, if you had three receivers on one side and Cole on the other side, and you want to tilt the coverage over there, well, you still have Cole one-on-one backside. And that's for all of our players. That's what weapons does for you offensively. It really balances out the defense. It makes them play true and honest rather than tilting the field one way or the other to a star player.
And when you have such weaponry available, not only at receiver, but now even more depth seemingly at tight end, then how quickly a rookie quarterback in Caleb Williams can pick things up and can know where there's a matchup that he can look to exploit is going to be key. And that's one thing Matt Eberflus talked about, is just specifically Caleb Williams' ability to learn.
Been very impressive. It's been very impressive. Yep. His ability to chunk information, put it into buckets, and operate. And we're not holding back. We're giving him a lot of information. You know, we're giving him the offense. And we want to be able to go through the whole offense before the offseason gets done. And primarily most of it. And then working into the summer, we'll have a plan for him there. And then work him in training camp and then go from there.
Is that unusual to give a rookie the whole offense?
Well, I mean, we're going to hold back a little bit for sure, because it's not going to, we're not game planning for anybody right now. So we certainly are going to give them all the concepts for sure.
It's not easy. And there's multiple approaches that can be taken with that. Do you kind of piecemeal things along a little bit, spoon feed him a little bit more here and there? And if there were another option for the Bears to start at QB, maybe that's more of the approach where you kind of mentally bring a guy along a little bit slower so you don't have the fear of potentially overwhelming him. But, I mean, Bears don't have any other real options for starting quarterback this season. So I think this is the version of things that makes the most sense to throw it all at Caleb and put him in a position where it's like drinking through a fire hose and you allow him to ingest as much as he can, and you've got the months, the weeks and months between now and training camp at the start of the regular season to get him as comfortable as he can be. And you evaluate everything that's being thrown at him and see what he's best at. And then by the time you get to regular season play, you have a sense for what he can execute at the highest of levels and put your offense in a position to preferably have success against this schedule they're going to face early in the season. Maybe they can get off and running since they don't have a divisional opponent until week 11. I want to get the perspective of my guy Jake Butt on this, both from an NFL perspective as it relates to the Bears, the final NFL team that he was with, but then also talk some college football with him, some Big Ten football with him as well. A lot to cover in the football world. We will do that with Jake Butt next on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
All right, well, I see progress. I see progress for sure. And that's going to continue to be that way. He's been in early, you know, stays late, you know, asking questions at night. He's got his iPad at night, you know, in the hotel, and been working his tail off.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
That was the voice of Bears head coach Matt Eberflus. Talked to the media today, and media got to go out there and check out a competitive practice session. The Bears, inexperienced offense. I won't call them all young, but they're certainly inexperienced working together in the Shane Waldron scheme versus a talented Bears defense that showed itself as one of the best in football by the end of last year. So there's a lot for a rookie quarterback to try and learn, to try and figure out when he's going out there playing against that level of competition. One of the other things Flus talked about was in a little bit more detail, addressing specifically the progress that he's seen so far from his rookie quarterback.
Specifically with Caleb, it's really just about when he, you know, can rip the call, you know, get the call in and out of the huddle, breaking the huddle, having that pace that we need to have. And we've been doing, of course, the walkthroughs, and he's been really good with that. And this is the first time going against, you know, a pro defense, you know, and a pretty good one. So it's going to be a learning for everybody. And they're getting everything together, and it was progress. I saw progress from the first day to the second to the third. So it's been good.
and pretty consistently, especially in the off season and undoubtedly early in the off season, the offense versus the defense can be something where you can in a lot of ways get on the same page, or you can at least perform at a high level defensively. As long as you've got talent over there, you can get cohesive on defense more quickly than you can on offense, because there's a little less choreography that's required on defense, because you are in more of a reactive position defensively versus what's happening with the offense. But you add in the fact that this defense is talented, is experienced in the game, and is experienced in the current scheme that they're running and facing an offense that, at least for today, what the media got to see, no Keenan Allen at receiver, no Roma Dunze at receiver, and a rookie quarterback who doesn't have a whole lot of experience facing them. Matt Eberflus talked a little bit about how the connection on offense can just be a bit different.
Yeah, I would say it is different. We have a good mix of guys that we've been doing some different unique things. Having guys different spots outside of football, just obviously voluntary, but getting together that way, and that's been really good. And you can feel that it's authentic. And we've had our skull sessions, which we had in the past. We've mixed the teams, four or five times, in terms of small groups and talking about, our path to the Bears and some of the things that we've had, hardships in our lives and how we got through that. And, and talking about different topics like that. So I always think that's good.
Now, those conversations can certainly be helpful. They can be vital to the continued success of a squad. And even though you don't have all the receivers healthy and on the field together, those conversations can still aid the development of that core. And Matt Eberflus talked a bit about the depth that the Bears have at wide receiver.
Typically, when you have one player in situational football, and even on first down based on formation, you certainly can tilt your coverage to that player to eliminate that player the best way you can. And when you have other guys that are on the opposite side of that, for example, if you had three receivers on one side and Cole on the other side, and you want to tilt the coverage over there, well, you still have Cole one-on-one backside. And that's for all of our players. That's what weapons does for you offensively. It really balances out the defense. It makes them play true and honest rather than tilting the field one way or the other to a star player.
And when you have such weaponry available, not only at receiver, but now even more depth seemingly at tight end, then how quickly a rookie quarterback in Caleb Williams can pick things up and can know where there's a matchup that he can look to exploit is going to be key. And it's one thing Matt Eberflus talked about, is just specifically Caleb Williams' ability to learn.
Been very impressive. It's been very impressive. Yep. His ability to chunk information, put it into buckets, and operate. And we're not holding back. We're giving him a lot of information. We're giving him the offense, and we want to be able to go through the whole offense before the offseason gets done, and primarily most of it. And then working into the summer, we'll have a plan for him there, and then work him in training camp, and then go from there.
Is that unusual to give a rookie the whole offense?
Well, I mean, we're going to hold back a little bit for sure, because we're not game planning for anybody right now. So we certainly are going to give them all the concepts for sure.
It's not easy, and there's multiple approaches that can be taken with that. Do you kind of piecemeal things along a little bit, spoon feed them a little bit more here and there? And if there were another option for the Bears to start at QB, maybe that's more of the approach, where you kind of mentally bring a guy along a little bit slower so you don't have the fear of potentially overwhelming him. But I mean, Bears don't have any other real options for starting quarterback this season. So I think this is the version of things that makes the most sense, to throw it all at Caleb and put him in a position where it's like drinking through a fire hose, and you allow him to ingest as much as he can. And you've got the months, the weeks and months between now and training camp at the start of the regular season, to get him as comfortable as he can be. And you evaluate everything that's being thrown at him and see what he's best at. And then by the time you get to regular season play, you have a sense for what he can execute at the highest of levels and put your offense in a position to preferably have success against this schedule they're going to face early in the season. Maybe they can get off and running, since they don't have a divisional opponent until week 11. I want to get the perspective of my guy Jake Butt on this, both from an NFL perspective as it relates to the Bears, the final NFL team that he was with, but then also talk some college football with him, some Big Ten football with him as well. A lot to cover in the football world. We will do that with Jake Butt next on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.